Every once in a while, I have a thought of, what if it's somebody's first Sunday coming to church? For those of you who've been here for a while, you know that what you just saw there is going to lead into understanding the scriptures a little bit better this morning. If this is your first time, though, just roll with it. Trust me, eventually it's going to come back around. We're looking through a series of Bible verses in the right now of times where God just steps in and says, this is what is better between these two options. And we talked last week about how when you're trying to choose between which is better, it's a harder choice. It's a harder to figure out because things that are easy are the kind of the right and wrong, the good and evil kind of decisions. Those decisions which should be plain and obvious. Like, you know, it should be plain and obvious what Jerry Jones ought to do, but it's plain and obvious what he's going to do, right? It's just kind of the way those things work. But when you're talking about what is better, it's not always as obvious. And so last week we looked at a verse out of Psalm 84 where he says, better is one day in your courts than 1,000 elsewhere. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than live into the tents of the wicked. This week we're going to be going over to the book of Ecclesiastes and looking at, I'll give you the verse and then we'll kind of break it down, where he says, better one handful with peace than to have two handfuls of never-ending stress. Is that Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 6? It'd be better to have one handful of peace than to have two handfuls of never-ending stress. Now, when I say that, you're like, well, yeah, obvious. The problem, though, is we get ourselves in the positions where we have two handfuls of never-ending stress without realizing that's what decisions we're making. But he says, keep this principle in mind as you're looking to make choices, because there'll be other things waging war against this idea. And if you go back a couple verses, he talks about the issue of always wanting to have more or to think that more is better. And that's an issue that comes up. And I think that goes back to when we're like little kids, because the only commodity you know as kids are toys and food, right? And if one M&M is good, then a whole bag is better, right? One cookie is good, two is better. One toy is good, all the toys are better. I couldn't find the picture, but one of my boys, I don't want to embarrass him because he's going to be at a service later. I won't tell you which one. I've got a picture of him where he's got a toy in each hand, and he's got one in his mouth, and he's got one pinched underneath his chin, and he's trying to walk around, and every time he goes, they keep dropping, and he keeps trying to pick, oh, he's got them under the arms too, and they keep dropping, and he keeps picking up, and it's such a perfect metaphor of our life, is we can't be better just to have one toy that you can actually play with and enjoy than to have a handful of never-ending stress, but we have the idea that more is better, and we want more house and more opportunity, more options. I looked it up, it was I don't know if y'all know, there's a guy named Christopher George Wallace. You may not recognize that name. He was a notoriously big philosopher back in the last century. And he's remembered for saying this many times. He says, I don't know what they want from me, but the more money we come across, the more problems we see. The guy who co-wrote that statement of profound wisdom is a guy who now has far more than 99 problems to deal with in his current situation. But maybe some of y'all do know that notoriously big philosopher. It's coming around for some of y'all. I have to say it a few times. The rest of y'all, you're not going to get it if you don't know 90s hip-hop. But Solomon said it this way, though. He said, so the more money we come across, the more problems we see. He simply said, it's better to have one handful of peace than to have two handfuls of never-ending stress. Same idea, same concept, just not to the same rhythm of music. And he goes on to say, this is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. He's going to say this multiple times throughout the book. Solomon says this again and again. This is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. The book of Ecclesiastes could, Ecclesiastes just simply means writer, philosopher, teacher. That's what the book means. So it's a book written by the philosopher. And Solomon is a philosopher. He's an ancient philosopher who's writing a book about what the meaning of life is and how do you find happiness in life. That's what the whole book of Ecclesiastes is about. It's about the search for meaning and the search for happiness. We would call in our country, we're on the endless pursuit of happiness. We want to find happiness. We want to find meaning. And Solomon is going to say, under the sun, that means outside of an understanding of God, you're not going to find it. Because his conclusion at the end of the day is going to be the only meaning that there is in this life and the key to true happiness is to understand that this life is about nothing more than a loving relationship with your creator, your maker, your savior that you can enjoy for all eternity. Where do I get that statement from? It's in every book of the Bible, and this is what Solomon's conclusion is going to ultimately be, is that this life is about nothing more than a loving relationship with the one who made you and created you and saved you, such that you might be able to enjoy a relationship with him for all eternity. If you make it about anything else, you're going to find it is an endless pursuit. It is like chasing after the wind. It's going to be meaningless. And so, in the midst of all this, he says, you know, where do we get this idea that two is better than one? And he goes back to verse 4, and he says, well, it comes from envy. What happens is you see what somebody else has, and you want what they have. And so he says, it all comes from an envy. It all comes from, he says, I saw that all the toil and achievement, they seem to spring from one person's envy of another. You see what they have, and then you got to have it. And that's where that opening scene comes from. I had seen that at some point. That series came back out like 2004 to 2009, and it's back when Britney Spears married Kevin Federline, who was one of her backup dancers, and she ended up having kids with him, and they were just two of his six kids from different baby mamas and whatnot, the Federlines. And I always found it comical that, you know, here it is, you're in a trailer park aspiring that you could be living the life of the Federlines, right? Now, why that was so funny to me is because shortly after that, I lived in a camper. When I say I lived in a camper, I mean that was my house. I'd bought an empty lot where eventually I wanted to build a house, but I was going to build it myself, so it was going to take a long while. So the only place I owned was a camper, and that's where I lived. And the campground's a very unique, diverse place. I would say it is the most economically diverse place of anywhere in America, if not the world, especially that close of proximity. Like, gone are the days where, like, when you think about going camping, how many of y'all think, like, you're going to go out to the woods and enjoy nature? That's not what a campground is. A campground is like, hey, you want to hang out for a week? Here, we can, let me just squeeze right in here, and I'm going to live right here, because that's what camping is. It is more crowded than you could possibly imagine. And the crazy thing about a campground is, somewhere, I couldn't find this picture either, I was looking for it. You see all, I mean, if you're living at a campground, you see everything, right? And there'll be people come and go for different lengths of time. One of the guys who was there for quite a while, his camper was one of those, he had like a 1990 some odd like Chevy pickup truck with the camper top on the back. And that was what he lived in. That was his house. That was it. That's all he owned was that camper. It was his transportation and it was his home. And every day he'd take us home to wherever he was going to work. And he'd bring us home back and park it there and hook it up. And that's what he lived in. Right next to that one weekend was one of those tour bus campers. Have you ever seen those things? They start about 120 grand and they go up to like 500,000 and more. So you literally have a guy who has his whole life savings is summed up in $10,000 is what he's living in. Right next to a guy who's got upwards of $300,000 of disposable income to buy something he might use a few weekends a year. And they are literally 3 feet from each other. I don't know where else you're going to find that diverse of an economic span in the same area. So, living in there for quite a while, eventually there was another camper that was there that also was living there full time. And this is where the issue of envy came in. Because they had a really nice camper, especially compared to mine. They had a big screen TV, they had this really nice porch layout, and then above all, they had a washer dryer. Now, if you don't have a washer-dryer in your house, you know what an amazing luxury it is to see somebody who's got a washer-dryer that you don't have, especially if you're staring, you can see it through their window. Through one window, I could see their washer-dryer, and through the other, I could see their big screen TV. And that clip always came to mind because I would always call them, I don't know what their names was, we just always called them the Federlines. It's like, man, it must be nice living life like the Federlines over there with that washer dryer and that big screen TV, you know, because no matter where you're at, there's always somebody above you and there's always somebody below you, right? And even if you think you're at the bottom, trust me, there is somebody below you. And I don't know who they are, but I found a way to describe them recently. I was at a thrift store. And I was over in the white section of the thrift store. That's not a racial term. That's how thrift stores are laid out. They're laid out by the colors of the clothes, right? So if you're in the white section, you go over to the white section. I wasn't looking for this. I was looking for a T-shirt. But I found my new definition of the brokest you could possibly be at the thrift store. They were selling used tidy whities for a quarter. Knew they cost a dollar. Just let it sink in for a minute when you're at the point where you can't buy new tidy whities. I don't think there's a lower level of broke. Anybody? Anybody? Anybody think there's a lower level of broke than used tidy whities? I mean, wouldn't you save for that? If there's anything you're going to save up and splurge on? No? Okay, maybe it's only me. To me, that homeless guy should just put out, need new drawers, don't want to buy used. Anything will help. You with me on that? Right. So all that to say, somebody's looking up at you right now and going, must be nice to have new drawers, right? Somebody's looking up even where you're at. All that to say, we all are motivated by envy, what we see somebody else have. And of course, now with social media, you're seeing what everybody else has 24/7, 365 days of the year. And even though it's not even what they really have, it's just an image of what they have or what they have on occasion or what they've rented. We like the image of the whole thing. Anybody familiar with, probably familiar with the term keeping up with the Joneses? Anybody know where that came from? Anyone? I looked it up recently because I kind of had to know. Like, where did it come from? It came from a cartoon strip back in 1913 called Keeping Up with the Joneses. And there was a family named the McGinnis family, and their neighbors were the Joneses. And so the whole comic strip was basically illustrating this proverb out of Ecclesiastes. It's better to have one handful of peace than two handfuls of endless stress. And so the McGinnis family was always envying what the Joneses had. And the hilarity of the comic strip was all about the things that they would get themselves into trying to keep up with the Joneses. The Joneses are never shown in the cartoon, but they're referred to in almost every one of the comics. I went through and read several of them. They're referred to in almost every one of the comic strips, what the Joneses have, and the Joneses doctor, and the Joneses car, and the Joneses, everything else is what the Joneses have. And then they get themselves into all kinds of messes trying to keep up with the Joneses. That's where the origination of it's from. Because we're always about comparing ourselves. We're comparing where we're at, where our marriage is at, where our kids are at, where our house is at, with somebody else around us, because we're always looking to compare ourselves to something else. One of the great quotes I was reading on this was looking up for different ideas on this. I guess in one of Jordan Peterson's book he writes, he says, never compare yourself to where somebody else is at right now. Rather, compare yourself to where you were. Because it's not fair to compare yourself to somebody else. No matter what, there's nobody else who is you. Everybody starts from a different place. Is that a fair statement? There is no equity. There is no equality. Everybody starts from a different starting place. There are people elsewhere in the world that look at you and say, I wish I had what you have. Most everybody else in the world wishes they could just have what you have, regardless of what you have or don't have. And so you can't compare yourself to anybody else because their path hasn't been your path. Rather, the only person with your path is you. And compare yourself to where you were a year ago, 5 years ago. Am I doing better? Am I progressing better? Am I on a good path or not? And if I'm not, I need to make some changes. And if I am, well, then I need to keep going and doing what I'm doing. I can only compare myself to myself. But Solomon just comes back. He goes, part of what gets us into this idea of getting to this two-handful life is we think we have to have what everybody else has. And it comes in two primary areas, the two commodities of our life, time and money. When it comes to time, we don't call it time. We don't spend time. Rather, we call it opportunity, right? Because nobody wants to have a limited number of opportunities. You want to have an endless number of opportunities. You want to increase your opportunities, right? Isn't it great to have opportunity? Opportunity is great. And so we get presented with opportunities, and we feel as though we're going to be missing out if we don't take the opportunities that we have. When you combine keeping up with the Joneses with FOMO, you've got a recipe for a two-handful kind of life. Fair to say that? Because you don't want to miss out on it. There's great opportunities at work, opportunities for promotion, opportunities to make more money, to be a part of a bigger project. There's always opportunities for advancement. With your kids, it's all kinds of opportunities being thrown their way now. Anybody who grew up 20 or more years ago ever look at your parents and say, Mom, Dad, I think it's time we hit the road. I think you need to fund my dream, and I think we need to travel more than a minor league baseball team now. That just wasn't a thing. Right? But there's all kinds of opportunities, and you feel like as if your kids are going to miss out on opportunities in the childhood that they could possibly have if you don't go and do all of these things. And there's endless number of entertainment opportunities, of streaming programs and movies to watch and TV shows to be a part of. Not to mention what you find on your phone week after week, everything that is just piped right in there for you to take advantage of. There's friends who want to hang out and need help and want to go do stuff with you, and somewhere in there gets lost is church. And I got to pause on the church thing. As I'm planning out this message, there's sometimes you'll read through the scriptures, and this is going to sound odd. It's almost like as if you'll read things in the Bible that are so practical, I stop myself and I go, how is this different than a self-help talk? You ever have that moment? I mean, everything I'm talking this morning is straight out of the scripture. But I look at it and I go, but what's the spiritual value here? Why is God so big on this? To understand this, you have to go over to the New Testament. Jesus tells multiple stories. There's one about him scattering seed. So the farmer's out scattering seed. Some of it grows up, some of it doesn't. Some lands on rocky soil, some lands on fertile soil, all different kinds of soil. Some work, some doesn't. He tells another story about a banquet where he says, you know, go out and invite people into the banquet. And a bunch of people who get invited don't show up. So he says, go out and invite anybody and everybody you can find for them to show up. He's got this other story you'll see with Jesus where there's two sisters, and one of them is there listening to Jesus as Jesus is teaching and talking shortly before his death, and the other one is in the kitchen working, and she's all upset because her younger sister's not working. You know what all three of those stories have in common? The issue was busyness. What kept people from having a close relationship with God, or even any relationship with God, was busyness. If you look at the parable of the sower sowing the seeds, what was the thing that choked out the relationship with God? Busyness. If you look at the banquet, why is it nobody wants to show up for the banquet? Busyness. Why is it that Martha is in the kitchen and not there listening to Jesus shortly before he is crucified? Busyness. Busyness is the issue. You know what the number one reason is that people quit going to church? Busyness. I just got busy. You know, whether it be they got travel games on the Sundays or whether it be they just need to sleep in. I mean, after all, what other day do you have to sleep in? It's my only day. I need to catch up. I need to mow the yard. I need to catch up on things because that's what we do. We don't have free time anymore. Something's got to give, and usually what gives is God because he's so giving. And so we take and we take and we take from God. Isn't it kind of interesting that two of the Ten Commands already deal with something we've talked about? Don't envy and take time for God. Take a day off. Take some rest. It could maybe be a thing that God thinks is very important. And it's the busyness that's going to crowd it out. I was reading some other stats about all this. It says something changed in American sociology in the 1990s. In the 1990s, for the first time, there was the full avalanche swing to the other side. And the avalanche swing is where now the vast majority of Americans are growing up literally without a parent in the home. And what it means by that is either it comes from a single-parent family, where, of course, a single parent's got to work, or it's a dual-income family, where both parents are working. Because in order to afford life as it is now, that just becomes a requirement. And so what ends up happening is that what used to be free time on the evenings or weekends now got gobbled up with the other necessities of life, like groceries and errands and laundry and doing homework. And what gets squeezed out of all that is family time, social time, church time, because those are the things that give. And so you have a family that no longer spends time together. You've got people who no longer have time for friendships. And then, of course, God's going to get lost in the shuffle. When you ask anybody, hey, how are things going right now? After they tell you they're fine, if you press a little bit further, the next thing you're going to say, well, it's just really busy right now. Just how many are on a busy time? Is this a busy season? Come back to school? No? Yes? No? A couple of y'all? The rest of y'all got free time, I guess. You know, just, wow, you guys need to figure out something to do with your time. The rest of us are just a little busy. It's just busy, busy, busy. You know, hey, small groups are coming up. Can you join a small group right now? No, this is a busy time. Next semester, maybe things will slow down after the turn of the new year. Just always busy. And you know what else people say? I'm just tired. You know, I'm just really tired right now, you know? How many of y'all, your favorite day of the year, your favorite holiday of the year, is that one where you get to sleep an extra hour? Yeah, come on. That's the best holiday of the year. I've got a new idea. What I think we ought to do is, the math works out pretty close. I think every night you should get an extra hour of sleep, and we just lose one day a month. How about that? The math's pretty close, right? And at the end of the year, we'll just add another month to the calendar or something like that, right? We'll just go to 24-day months, and each day we'll get an extra hour of sleep. But what's going to happen pretty soon? Will we actually sleep with that extra hour? Nope. How many of y'all, when you have that extra hour, you just stay up an extra hour later? Like, oh, I get to stay up an extra hour tonight. Yeah, you see, that's what we do. You give it, and we just think more is better, and more, and more, and more. We try to cram more in. But eventually, what gets lost in the more is God and people. We talked last week about how, what is it that gives more joy to life? It's the people, it's the relationships in life. And that's where we get to the other thing that we do too more of, which is the money side of it, the stuff side of it, both how we get it and how we spend it. There's always opportunities for side hustles and making more and doing more. It's very key when I say this life is about nothing more than establishing, growing, developing a loving relationship. Life is about relationships with the one who made you and created you and saved you, such that you might be able to enjoy that relationship for all eternity. And yet, the reality is we think life is about what we're doing, what we're accomplishing, what we're achieving. And so we think if I just work more and I do more and I make more and I achieve more and I provide more opportunities to experience more things, that's what this life is really all about. And all fear of missing out on doing more and achieving more and becoming more. And all the while God's saying all of that is wasting away. It's all temporary. It's all going away. This whole world eventually is going away. I'm creating a whole new one. Everything you're working to create is eventually going to go bye-bye. The only thing that will remain is me. Some days those lessons are easier to learn than others, unfortunately. And then I don't even really need to get into the whole spending money thing. We all know that's an issue. The principle he's coming out of here is the place where you enjoy life is in the margins. Free time and extra money. Two things nobody has, right? Free time. If anybody in here who has free time, let's face it, there's something else you probably should have been doing during what you called free time, right? I got all kinds of free time at work. My boss don't have me doing nothing. I'm not quite sure your boss would see it the same way, but, right, free time. And then, you ever watch those home shows where people are going to, like, shop for a house? At the beginning of the show, they'll always say, well, our budget is this. And then the realtor always just shows them something a little bit bigger than the budget. And wow, that's so much nicer. And what do they end up doing? They almost always buying the house is just a little bit over their budget. And it doesn't seem like a whole lot. Let's just say it's $300 a month, more in mortgage. Let's not even add in all the other costs that a bigger house is going to bring. Let's just say $300. What do you think you'd enjoy more? The extra of that house for that $300. Keep in mind, that means you're going to have to work a little bit more, fewer hours at home. What do you think you'd enjoy more? Working a little bit extra to have that money to afford that house, or let's just say you had 3 free nights a week and $300 to spend every week. What would your life look like if you had 3 free nights and $300 to spend? 2 nights you could just be lazy and relax, and the other night you'd go, honey, we got $300 to burn tonight. What do you want to go do? Now, I know that probably just affords a McDonald's Happy Meal for each of the kids now, as much as that costs, but wouldn't that change the trajectory of your life? Mr. Solomon's saying, better is just one handful. Because if you only got one hand occupied with all the stuff that you've got, your whole schedule is here, and all of your expenses are here. You got, this is free. You can do whatever you want over here. But yet we look at him, we go, well, I've got the opportunity to have 2 handfuls. And he's like, yeah, and that's going to lead to a life of never-ending stress. And eventually, here's what happens, is you push God out because you don't have any room for anything of God because you're already full. And then when your life is so stressful, you look back and you go, God, this is all your fault. Am I wrong? We blame God for the stress, and yet the stress is the very thing that is why we've choked God out of our life. And you begin to see the spiritual value of God just simply saying, I would rather you live a one handful life. Develop and enjoy a relationship with me and the people who I've placed you in this world with, such that this is a relationship you'll have for all eternity. Everything else is wasting away. There are times where that becomes very vivid. and you look back, and everybody always says, I'm so glad I spent the time with them. And I'm so glad I spent the time with God. Few people say that about all the other stuff we cram into our schedule and spend our money on. That's the spiritual value here. That's why it comes up again and again with Jesus, and that's why the wisest philosopher ever lived says, if you're looking for the right life, make time for the relationships in God. Better is one handful of peace than two handfuls of never-ending stress. Would you join me as we close our time in prayer? God, I thank you for this reminder of something that seems so basic and so elementary, and yet it is something that is absolutely seems impossible to master in this life that we live. Because at the moment of decision, we think the opportunity is better, and more is better, and more money is better, and more opportunities for increasing our wealth is better. And it leaves us overstressed, overscheduled, and in debt. And eventually, God, it will push you out of our life.
Interesting question.
Sure is. God, your word does have the answer. May we not forget that this life is better with just one handful in peace than trying to cram as much as we possibly can into a life that leads to never-ending stress. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.